Welcome to the Fabric Podcast, where we're talking about what's at the core for Fabric as a movement and community, and hopefully inspiring you to wonder what's at your core, too. Here's Greg Meyer.
Happy New Year. Welcome to 2022. Okay, I know I'm a little late on that. We are already about 2 weeks into it. So you get a brand new, shiny new year. What are you going to do with it? Now, I know, we all know that January 1 is just another day of the year, and waking up for a new year is really no different than waking up any other day of the year. Nonetheless, there's something about starting a whole new calendar with a whole new number that wakes us up and triggers questions about what we're doing and why we're doing it, and that's not a bad thing. Here with Fabric, we're going to be doing that too. Not making New Year's resolutions, but maybe the step that comes before that. Not focusing on what we're going to do or not do, but the why behind it all. In particular, we will be looking at five core values that we as Fabric share. The staff has spent significant time on this over the past year, not thinking what would we like them to be, but what are they? I mean, what is and has been at work driving us, leading us when we are at our best? We picked out five after a lot of conversation and wrangling, weighing, and wrestling. Cynthia Sarver, one of us Fabric folks, helped a lot. This sort of work is her specialty, and we were really fortunate to have her helping us. Now, if you've been around, I don't think you're going to find these five core values to be much of a surprise. This isn't an announcement of anything new, but an articulation of what is, like I said, when we are at our best. We want to talk about them for a couple of reasons. One is that we want you to have a deeper understanding of what is at work within our community. And another is considering how these core values work within our life as a community might be helpful to you in discerning or refining your own values for your life. Now, please know, I am not assuming that these core values are your core values. Some may be, but I'm pretty sure that each of ours are unique to us. And individual core values tend to work a little bit differently than corporate core values. And that's okay. We aren't spending time talking about these so that you will adopt them as yours, but because determining and understanding what drives any of us is time well spent. Okay, first, a couple of things to know about core values. The first is this: you've already got them. Whether you have chosen them or not, whether you are aware of them or not, they are at work calling the shots of what you do, what you choose, who you show up to be in the world. What you do may feel random or simply decided at the moment, but whatever makes one choice win out over the other, to talk to your coworkers about a problem or to sit in the blue chair instead of the green chair, whatever that is, it's a result of which way the scale tips according to some value you hold. If you can see no order, no rhyme or reason, that probably just means your core values are random and not a distilled expression of what matters most to you. Okay, the next thing to know about core values is that chosen core values are better than adopted core values. Seriously, adopted values get planted inside you from your exposure to peer pressure, life experiences you haven't sorted out, maybe the way you were raised, or any of the other things that influence you. I'm sure you already know that you're exposed to tens of thousands of media impressions every day. Those are just a form of peer pressure, making you think that their ideas are your ideas. Now, those values that get planted in you or me aren't necessarily bad. Many are great. The question is, would you choose them if you thought about it? Did you choose them? Are the things that planted themselves in your life what you want to be about? When push comes to shove in a tough situation, what will decide door A or door B, or not to open either door? A chosen core value should be what guides you. That takes us to the next thing to know about core values, and that is that what doesn't come from your deeply held and consciously chosen values is a problem. It isn't aligned with what you want your life to be about. It is taking you somewhere you don't want to go, making you someone you don't want to be. No action, no decision is too mundane as to not have some reflection of your values. What you eat, where you live, how you spend your money, even what you watch and listen to. It's all a vote for what our world should be like and an influence on who you are. The point, having and using core values that you've chosen to reflect what matters most to you is important. It changes things. The last thing to know is this. Core values work as an ecology, not a competition. There are not 3 or 5 or 10 standalone truths. No, there are 3 or 5 or 10 values that work with each other. They are not pillars, each standing equally and independently. No, they're much more like dance partners. I like to think of an ecology of core values because none of them alone will be able to guide your life. None of them is sufficient unto itself. They are all essential but rely on each other to serve you. The real power is how they work together, taking their turns, leading, supplementing, rounding each other out, balancing, conditioning one another. Now, that's enough, but if there was one more, it would be that your core values change and evolve over time. That's not only natural, it's just how it works. It's important. And likewise, no one does this perfectly. Everyone struggles with identifying what they want to have truly be at the center of their lives and then in focusing on that rather than on what doesn't matter. That's the life is messy factor. You are always practicing. We all are. So to recap, you have values that drive you already, whether you know it or not. And it's better if you know that and you can name them. Because the ones that just happen into your life too often pull you away from what you love and find life in. Also, each core value itself is, on its own, a bit out of kilter. You have a constellation of them, and they work together. They shouldn't compete with each other. They create an ecology of sorts. And all this core stuff sounds a lot easier than it really is. So, what are the 5 core values that we identified for Fabric? Choose connection, brave uncertainty, think big, whimsify, and share warmth. Why those? Well, there's a lot to unpack to answer that, which is why we're talking about them for 5 weeks. And like I said, while the list itself may surprise you, and they sure would have surprised me if I'd seen them before we dug into our life together, while it might surprise you, as we talk about them, I hope you'll say, yeah, exactly. That describes the community I am part of. So today, we're talking about choose connection. 2 important words there. In fact, only 2 words there, but they're both important. Connection being together rather than apart. Community, relationship, share, network, collaborate, unify. If you want to be churchy, connection is what church means. It doesn't refer to buildings, denominations, doctrines, creeds, or Sunday services. Church is about connections. It is Greek for called out. Called out of our separateness into the world. To be part of what the world is really all about. Likewise, words like congregation, synagogue, they both basically translate as gathering, being together. The other word is choose. Connecting is a choice. Sure, we run into it, live with, work with other people all the time, but even so, we must choose to accept those connections, to invest in them. Note, being around other people is not the same as being connected to them, okay? The truth is that to be deeply connected, deeply woven, is countercultural, and thereby it needs to be chosen. It's not automatic, at least not in our mainstream Western culture right now, which encourages and rewards individualism and self-sufficiency and independence. We love stories of people who have lifted themselves up by their own bootstraps, something that is usually not as true as it's presented, by the way. And we're conditioned to be suspect about collaboration and cooperation and things like that. And they're forms of dependency, and that's a weakness to be overcome, right? And for good reason, right? I mean, there's a reason why we feel that way. People are a pain in the ass. Or as Melissa Locke, who works with groups and community engagement here in Fabric, likes to say, people are so people-y. Personally, I think that's just the more polite way of saying that they're a pain in the ass, but she probably should be the one who talks about it, not me, huh? Anyway, I invite you to pause right now and make a list of all the reasons why it is not worth your time and effort to involve, consult, deal with, rely on, listen to, work with other people. Go ahead. Hit pause. Find a scrap of paper or do it in your head. Make a list of why it's not worth bothering with other people. Okay, got your list. Here's mine. People are nosy. They've got weird quirks, and that annoys me. They always need something. They have opinions, most of which are wrong. They're not mine. They slow me down, and either they just don't understand me, or I just can't understand them. And face it, if you want to get something done right, you got to do it yourself. People are too much trouble. Now, I'm sure you haven't ever thought any of those things, but some people do. Yeah, we all do sometimes anyway, right? Even if we know better than to accept those feelings, they rise up inside us and they discourage us from choosing connection over going solo. Now, I find that tendency very interesting, considering that our connectedness is one of the indisputable facts of our existence. And like most things that are deeply true, there is a paradox here. Two truths that seem opposite, but are both equally true and important. Those two truths are, on the one hand, the uniqueness and individuality of each and every human being and of every other thing living or not living. And on the other hand, our inability to exist apart from one another. You are you, you're not me, not that other person or that fly or that rock or that tree. You are a distinct, separate individual, but you are also part of the entirety of things without which you could not exist. Both aspects of us are true. Both are important. A great example of these two sides of the coin is in that old proverb that says, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Now, you've heard me say this before. You are created for community, for connection. That's not really a faith statement. That's really a fact statement. Everything about you, biologically, psychologically, socially, it's all hardwired for community. You can isolate from other people. You can even enjoy or prefer that. But you came from the connection of other people so that at some point in your life, you could make this choice to be separate, to isolate. No one starts and stays separate. And while you may be separate from other people, you are still connected to, involved with, participating in a vast array of others, living and not living. The natural world, the air you breathe, the water you drink, the food you eat. You are never not part of everything. You may be off in a corner, but you are still part of the same world as the rest of us. Now, let this be something to always remember as you choose connection. And hopefully this too is familiar to you. You are meant to be part of all things, not apart from all things. When we see ourselves as part of, not apart from everything else in the world, while holding on to our own identity within that larger whole, we find our place. We begin to understand what it means for our lives to matter. We need that context of all of us to understand the meaning of the one of us. Okay, now you made a list of why people are too much trouble. Now make another list. What are all the things that you could not do alone? Or at least are so much better when you do them with others. Okay, go ahead. Hit pause. Make the list. Got it? Now, whether your list includes playing volleyball or rock, paper, scissors, building a house, a car, paddling a canoe, eating a meal, having a conversation, or making a baby, I think this list is a lot longer than the other. Sure, there are many things you can do on your own, but even most of those rely on other people to supply what you need to do it alone. Can you read a book if no one ever wrote it or published it? The Bible may not come out and say this too often, but it is simply because that was the assumption. It's a given. It was their default position to be in community and to see themselves that way, unlike our individualistic society today. For instance, Israel was not a bunch of people. They were a people. Love God, love yourself, love your neighbors. That sounds like connection. And that's the basis of the Bible's first and foremost teaching. And of all the expressions in the New Testament, that portion of the Bible written after the time of Jesus, one another is the most common. Love, care for, honor, serve, comfort, encourage, build up, accept, forgive one another. In fact, the phrase one another alone occurs 20 or so times. Together, connected, community, that was the water in which Jesus and his followers swam. Now, our five core values don't have an order. We think of them in a circle. Yet, when I had to decide which to start with, there was no question that this was the one. It sets the stage for the others. What we are doing as Fabric finds its meaning in our togetherness. Indeed, creating community is fundamental to what we do. Fabric is Fabric because of the community we are. I mean, face it, from an objective product provided perspective, we aren't that special. I mean, there are better podcasts. Yeah, I have to admit that. Better music. Sorry, Chris. More famous people out there. All at your fingertips. But Fabric is valuable because we know each other. Fabric is a place to know and be known. not known for a lot of the popular societal markers of wealth, good looks, success, careers, etc., but for who you really are. And as honest, vulnerable, and real as you are ready to be, we are here for you, and you are here for us. We need that. Choose connection. It's a countercultural choice, but it is the path of being woven into the fabric of all things, not of contributing towards its frying. As such, my hope is to help you and me to make connection our default choice, rather than the exceptional one. To do that, I've got an exercise, and I'd like you to try it. For the next week, pause towards the end of each day and note two things. First, ask yourself, what was one connection that you chose to make? Write it down. Second is this, what was one connection that you might have made, but you didn't? Okay, that's not too hard. You can do that in a minute or two, or spend more time if you want. This connecting stuff is hard, and it doesn't always work out. But I'm wondering that if we keep track of what happened because we connected and what might have happened had we connected, I wonder if it wouldn't help us rewire our instinct, move us from individualism to being individuals within community. So I was interested in this enough to try it myself and to invite a couple other people to do it with me. And so I invited them here. Well, virtually here. So I want to welcome these three guests, friends of mine, to being part of the podcast here and sharing their experiences. So, Aaron, tell us who you are. What you up to? Why did you say yes to this?
Yeah, I really appreciated being asked. I'm Aaron McGilvery, and connecting with others is something that I think about pretty regularly anyway. I currently live alone and working from home for over a year and almost 2 years. So there's a lot of intentionality around connecting with others in my life and making sure I'm not being a hermit.
My name is Dan. I live in the Twin Cities with my wife and two kids. Like Aaron, I started working remotely in the end of March of 2020. I lead a team at work of software developers that are global, and working remote has actually made certain types of connections with them a little easier. And so I'll get into that a little bit more.
That's great.
I'm Martha Toffland. I am a mom of two young kids and just went back to work recently, all virtual. At the start of the pandemic, I already felt isolated as I had been caring for my husband who had ALS and passed away right at the start of the pandemic. So it was for me, it has been isolation to more isolation than things opening up than feeling isolated. So I agreed to participate as well because I know the value of connection. And I think today I am valuing virtual more than I would have ever before. I would rather connect with people near and far than not have those experiences and touch points.
So you all agreed to be noting connections you're making and then noting connections maybe that you could make. How'd it go?
I can share one instance where I do wonder if I would have made the same choice and connection had we not been doing this. So this is going to tie into the pandemic and decision-making and virtual and all of that. So I was supposed to host some dear friends up in northern Minnesota at my parents' home up there actually tomorrow. And as you can probably guess, it became a very difficult decision with the virus spreading right now. And I found myself, as we were already undergoing this experiment and journaling, trying to make decisions by myself, which I, by circumstance, do a lot because I am by myself. And then I thought, wait, why don't I just reach out to someone from the group and have them help me talk this out? So on one of the nights, I chatted with one of these friends for an hour, and it wound up being very supportive. And then the next day I reached out to the whole group and said, can we Zoom this tonight and just all get on the same page? And so together with the visual and all of our voices, we got to make a group decision, you know, to cancel the trip. And it was all really heavy and hard, but doing that together with them was way better than I was starting to have anxiety because I was just trying to take it all on myself. I wonder if I would have remembered to ask for help if we weren't doing this experiment.
I found that people's individual experiences with COVID played a big factor into some of the connections. And I have two really opposite examples. In the first case, a group of us got together for a happy hour with a former employee who has a 1-month-old. And so we were getting together to meet with him and his wife and reconnect and meet his baby. And that was just this past week when Omicron is pretty rampant here. And as we discussed it, everybody said, well, we're all vaccinated, we're boosted. And in his family in particular, he was pretty sure that he had, even though he was vaccinated, had COVID multiple times. So he thought that, they were covered. And so we got together. And as far as we can tell, there has been no negative outcome of that. A couple of days later, we connected with another family friend and asked if they would like to, get together to hang out. And they declined, saying, no, with COVID now, we're not seeing anybody. And so just a few days apart, but those personal experiences and realities with COVID played a big part of how we connected.
Yeah. Do you think, Dan, that even though this, second family declined invitation, was there a connection made with them?
I think definitely, because we reached out because we knew that they were feeling a bit lonely and disconnected because of being isolated. And so even the attempt at connection and reaching out made an impact on that feeling to know that we are there and thinking about them.
Yeah. Right. I think, the bar is way up here to get together. And if that isn't realizable, does that mean, well, okay, so we can't connect?
One more thing is just kind of the law of inertia, an object in motion stays in motion. So I notice the more I do stay in, and if I'm purposely isolating for a reason, then I tend to just keep making that choice. But when I start to engage more again, it's a reminder of I want to keep this motion going of reaching out and making plans and getting out of the house.
That's an interesting reflection. I found last week became really hard when it was so cold. In my reflection for this exercise, a missed opportunity. I think I was getting to the point where I really knew that I probably needed to go see my therapist, just talk about the isolating feelings that I'm having, and that winter for me this year is feeling a little bit harder than it usually has. And I don't know if it's just because we had that cold snap, and then working virtually, and it's just I don't know, but I think that cold snap was really hard for me.
Yeah, me too.
Anything happen while you were doing this that surprised you?
I wouldn't say anything surprising. I think overall it just confirmed how important connection is, but I think back to one of the points that we shared earlier, not all connection is meaningful. So even when I look at the virtual events that I had in the last, since we started kind of journaling and keeping track, there are some that I didn't look forward to and I left going, it didn't do a lot for me. And then there are others, I participate in a virtual grief support group that every time I walk away and go, I'm so glad I was there, whether it was because I needed support or someone else needed support. But yeah, I think the overarching theme for me is just connection is so important.
And I hear you echoing that idea of stewarding your attention. I mean, you only have so much connection available to you during the day, not being protective or elitist about it, but at the same time saying, I really need to maximize the connections that are going to be valuable to me and to other people, and maybe relax on some of the ones that feel obligatory or whatever and aren't really making a meaningful connection. Yeah.
I mentioned earlier that I work with a global team of software developers, and this experience reaffirmed for me the importance of reaching out and intentionally communicating to avoid misunderstanding. That sometimes something put in writing can be misinterpreted when a live chat is better. Being able to see people's facial expressions, having that extra dimension, it really helps to understand what's happening.
I'm wondering if while you were doing this experiment, you thought not so much about the connections way beyond yourself, but maybe the ones that are closest home, family, people you're living with, people that you would assume that you're well connected with.
The first interaction that I wrote down, this was just by chance, but a month or so ago, I put a placeholder on my calendar to spend time with my mom. She lives 5 minutes away. She helps out with my kids all the time. We do not because we don't want to, but because we're busy or whatever our excuse is, we don't make intentional time to be together. My notes say we just went to the mall and walked around and we had lunch together. We laughed so hard together. And that is, like, to me, such a treasure to have just, I literally had to put a placeholder on the calendar to spend time with my mom, but it was beautiful time together.
I mentioned the missed opportunity for connection just because of personal COVID concerns. Catherine and I pivoted that afternoon and we spent a few quality hours together. Again, you know, we see each other all the time, but having that one-on-one, you know, connection was really important. And that's how we spent the afternoon.
Yeah. I think it's really important to realize, and Martha and Dan, your comments both speak to that, being around other people doesn't necessarily equate connecting with them.
I would just add, I was going to see family, my whole family. And on the drive up, I set an intention of being present and leading with kindness and lighthearted and fun. There's a lot of really heavy stuff going on in my family right now. So I thought, okay, how can I show up with different kind of energy? And I don't know that I've ever really done that before, like set an intention, like this is how I would like to be as much as possible over the next 5 days. And it was really pleasant to have done that. And for myself, my experience was much more pleasant, and I hope for others.
So what do you think? Taking this time to consciously think about the connections we're making and the potential of connections that we aren't making, is this a useful thing to do?
I found it very valuable to make the connections intentional, both in terms of choice of connections and also reflecting on the value to all the people involved.
I echo that. I think just that extra step of thinking about how I felt when I connected with someone, or thinking about what feelings I was left with if I decided I didn't have time or didn't feel up to reaching out to a particular person or group. I just found that really helpful to sit and reflect on it.
Yeah, I would say too that taking the extra step, and I was taking 2 to 5 minutes, and that step of reflecting on it and looking back at what you chose to do and didn't do helped me see some patterns, things I want to continue doing more of and things I maybe want to change.
So thank you guys. And I hope this propels you in having better and better connections with the people that you are in this world with. And thank you for all the work you did with us and sharing so much with us.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, I hope all this helps you value choosing connection and maybe even starts moving it more into the default position in your life. I think that's worth all of us doing. But I can't really talk about this without acknowledging the irony of our current situation. Because of the Omicron variant of COVID going crazy right now, we're only a virtual community. And no, that's not my preference. I think face-to-face is the best. I think being physically present is really what community wants to and needs to be about. But we can't do that right now. So like we talked about last week and learned from Tobiso Rowan, rather than getting stuck on the hundreds of things we can't do, let's start exploring the thousands of things that are still left us. I mean, there's lots of ways we can be community even when we can't be face-to-face. Maybe if we shift some of our goals about connecting to fit what is possible when we aren't face-to-face, we're going to discover some things that we can do virtually that we wouldn't be able to do as well when we were physically present and all had to be in the same place at the same time. I think there's a lot that could be done there. Let me give you an example of that. Chris, the woman I married, we met in college. And the funny thing is that we started dating, and there was only a couple months until she left for France for half a year. And then she came back and we overlapped for about 10 days, which we could see each other. And then I headed off to the South Pacific and I was gone for over 7 months. And then we had a part of a semester together. And then I moved to the East Coast and she had a job in Minneapolis. And it was a couple of years of like that. We basically only had a long distance relationship. And this is back in the days when there weren't cell phones and text messages and email. I mean, you had to write a letter and send it through the post office or make a long distance phone call, which was incredibly expensive, especially for poor students. So not a lot of that happened. And the funny part of it is both of Chris and I credit the fact that we were not together as probably the reason that our relationship lasted. Yeah, I wouldn't ask for that. I don't recommend it. I wish we could have been together, but somehow not being able to connect easily made the connection we could have all that more valuable, and we tried harder with it, and we hung on to stuff that really mattered because a lot of the easy, superficial stuff that can happen when you're just playing together all the time wasn't available. Yeah. So, how can you connect? How can you make that your default position? I gave you this experiment. Try it this week, right? That is, each day towards the end, pause and note what was one connection that you chose to make and what was it like? What happened because of it? And the second was, what was one connection that you might have made but you didn't? As you consider that, I want to leave you with a couple of pieces here. First of all, I have a song that some of our musicians at Fabric put together. Chris Tripolino wrote this. Yeah, when we get together, music and all these different gifts that different people bring to make the piece as a whole are so important. And I think it's good to have those here too. Enjoy this.
Gives to No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main. If a clod be washed away by the sea, Europe is the less, as well as if a promontory were, as well as any manner of thy friends or of thine own were. Any man's death diminishes me, because I am involved in mankind, and therefore never sent to know for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee. No Man is an Island by John Donne.
That poem you just heard, it was written in 1623, 400 years ago. The reader was Dipankar Mukherjee, the founder and co-creative director of the Pangaea World Theater, whom you might remember was with us in November as part of our Reimagining series. I wanted to include this 400-year-old testimony to the truth of our connectedness and figured I could read it just fine. Then I thought about the challenge and asked myself, who do I know who could read it even better? And Dipankar, with his Shakespearean background and coming from India and England, well, he's the one who came to mind, so I asked. He happens to be in India right now, but our big world is pretty small with technology, so 24 hours later, I had this recording in hand. Thank you, Dipankar, and Mina, who helped us on this as well. Thanks to Chris Tripolino for his song and for editing this podcast and all the musicians in the band. Thanks to Martha and Dan and Aaron for their part. Thanks to my team at Fabric, who worked on articulating these five core values with me. Heidi Esposito, Melissa Locke, Katie Kennedy, Maya Dallagher, and Chris Tripolino, and who helped me understand what I could maybe say about this today. And thanks to Cynthia Sarver, who helped us understand how core values work and what ours were. Thanks to Chris, my partner in life. There's no connection like the one that we share. Thanks to my kids, and I have to say to my grandkids, Hannah and Nate and Gavin and Eli, they are teaching me a whole new world of connecting that I didn't know existed, and I love it. Thanks to a couple other people I love. I know they believe about connections like I do, but in these dark days, I've heard them argue why we have to give up on connectedness to get things done. They helped me on my commitment to choosing connection. And thanks to you, listener. Without you, there'd be much less purpose than never even trying to make this podcast. Next week, we'll be talking about braving uncertainty. See you then. But in the meantime, choose connection.
Thanks for listening. We hope this podcast sparks conversation in other parts of your life. If you're looking for meaningful connections, there's a Fabric group for you to try, whether you're in the Twin Cities or not. Tag @FabricMPLS with your wanderings on social media and find resources on our website, fabricmpls.com.